Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
This is episode number 12, Rejection, Slights and Salutes. I know, I've gotten some folks already asking me, when are you going to do an episode about rejection? And I've been wanting to do one for a while now, so don't think that I've been purposely delaying it, but I always thought that, let me get out some of those other issues first. It seems unusual, even on an art show, to start your first show with about rejection. So I wanted to start off on some of the other things that people were tackling or that even I was tackling and then go on to this. And so it's always been in the back of my mind. It's always something I wanted to do. So, and I'm very, very glad to do it because it's something that people are always asking me about. It's something that we eternally struggle as artists, as writers, rejection. So let me talk a little briefly about that, and we have five different categories that I put together for the show. This is not to say that there's not more categories or subcategories out there for rejection, because I'm sure there are, but these are the five that I find that are the most prominent that I deal with, or most people deal with in general, and it's something that would help us in the practical way to look out for what is real rejection, something we need to take account of in terms of our actions or our writing or just how we presented something, you know, things that we might have to take an account ourselves, and other times the things that we can dismiss or brush to the side because they're, you know, grossly unfair or just too mysteriously ridiculous, like the form letter, you know, the form letter you get in the mail or the email. So let me run those down here, okay? First, you got to keep in mind that rejection and any art form you're doing is a very common thing. I hear a lot from people that talk to me behind the scenes, folks that talk to me even in the pre-interviews. And, of course, I read a lot on the magazines or various writing pages, sites, Facebook, a good example. Folks that are struggling with rejection and openly talking about, you know, how it's harmful to them, how it really takes them back from what they're trying to do. Well, let me tell you this, and let me remind you of this, okay? In this craft that we've chosen, it's a major part of what we're dealing with, rejection. It happens a great deal, and it's something you're going to have to manage if you're going to want to be able to stay with us and do what you're doing. It's not going to just go away because you don't like it or because you think the world's unfair. Well, guess what? I don't like it either, and I already know the world's unfair, but some of it doesn't have to do with the rejection that you get. You'll learn in the show that some of that rejection is silly, and it's all about how you're handling it and how you process it that allows you to move forward and not let it become some kind of a stumbling block. But there's going to be examples in these categories where you're also accountable for the rejection you get. It's not simply just to blame the other person. So it's a mixed bag, and I'll point that out. Hopefully that'll be helpful for everyone and also something that's more accurate and indeed healthy for all of us all, because some of it we need to take to heart and some of it it's like, please, you're being silly. So I'll point those out, and I think you'll be very satisfied that it'll be a big help going forward on what you should take seriously and what you shouldn't, okay? Now here are the five categories, and I'll run them on by in the show here, okay? All right, we got first category, which is the soulless rejection. That's the kind of stuff you get in the form letter, okay? Second one we're going to be talking about will be the difference of definition. Third one will be difference of opinion, okay? Fourth one will be the wrong market. And then the fifth one is the editorial comment. And I'll give a brief explanation of each one of them as I go along, okay? First one, my favorite, soulless rejection, the soulless form letter. This is incredibly common. I dislike it. I won't practice it because I'm also an editor of our aerial chart. I'm the editor-in-chief there, and we don't allow it at all. Anybody that works with me on this magazine, they have to actually provide comment back. And that means if you send us 3 poems and we accept one, we're not obligated to tell you about why we didn't take the other 2. You got the one in. Be grateful. God bless. Thank you. Let's all move on. But if we reject all 3 of those poems, myself, if I do so, or the other editors involved, they have to give an explanation. Hey, I don't like this, or maybe you should consider that. But we have to give some kind of explanation. None of this soulless form letter stuff. I'll tell you something right now, folks. And hear me clearly. Hear me sincerely. Let it process deep in your body, okay? You are not rejected, in my book, if you get one of these stupid letters or emails. Because quite frankly, and I'm not trying to put anybody down out there, including other editors, but I can't tell, as an artist, if you even read the work I sent. Do you know how many times I sent out 3 and 4 and 5 things? You know, because the market allows it. To a publication, and I literally get the same soulless form letter back. I can't tell you if they really read it or not. I don't know, as an artist, did they do anything? Now, I'm not saying that every single thing that a magazine rejects, they're supposed to make a comment. I mean, that's what I do and that's what I practice in my magazine. And I'm not telling everybody that's what they need to do. They do what they want to do. That's fine. But what I do say is, I suspect my work is not being read. So why should I, and why should you, as an artist, take any of that stuff seriously? You might get a couple hundred of these things a year if you're putting out enough submissions. Why is she taking that stuff serious at all? You don't even know if they read it. You don't know what that really means when they put this nonsense paragraph about how it didn't correspond to their issues theme that month. What theme are we talking about? Because if there's a theme, it's often announced in advance. I should know. This theme in April will be about zebras that graze in the plains of Africa. Okay, great. So if I send them a poem about a squirrel, then I deserve to be rejected. Okay, fine. I got that. But oftentimes they're saying in these ridiculous form letters, it didn't go with the theme. It didn't go with the style of what we're doing. We didn't go this, it didn't go that. What are you talking about then? If there is something I need to know about, why are you not announcing that? Why is it not in your submission guidelines? We like this particular style. We like this particular theme. Or they'll put that other, what I call ridiculous statement. Read 4 or 5 of these issues of us, or even buy them, and then you'll get an idea of what we want. Really? What does that give me? It doesn't tell me anything. Half the times it just sounds like some academic jumbo mumbo. Some babble. What is that supposed to mean? I'm supposed to write like that in order to get in there? Please. None of that makes any sense. If you're not going to give people any clear direction, and folks, if you're not getting clear direction and you're sending it out as a shot in the dark, which sometimes that's all we can do, that's fine. You get that back. I'm telling you, don't take it seriously. I don't even consider it rejection. I just consider that a product of laziness and inconciseness, and I'm not going to take it seriously. I don't consider myself rejected, especially since I'll go to other publications later on down the line with that same, you know, group of poems or same fiction piece or nonfiction piece, and it gets published. Sometimes they even have comments about it. Really? What does that mean? Did that actually mean that there was a true difference of opinion, which is one of the categories we'll discuss a little later in the show? Or did that just mean that they did something incredibly original, like they actually read the things that were coming into them? I don't understand it. They're telling us that they have a couple of members on staff. How long does it take to read a couple hundred pieces of literature that comes in? Especially since most of these places, folks, they're not monthlies like I am. My aerial chart's a monthly magazine, 12 issues a year. Most of these publications we all send to, they're out maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So you're going to tell me you got a staff of 4 or 5 people and you guys can't read 300 entries in 90 days? Please. It doesn't add up, especially when they ask you for money on top of that, a submission fee. None of it adds up. You have to wonder if they read anything, if they even care. If I have to wonder about that, well, guess what? I'm also have to wondering, was I really rejected? No. Maybe we should call it something more accurately honest. I was ignored. And then I'll move on to the next publication. Maybe they won't ignore me. So that's it for that category over there. But that happens to be the bulk of these so-called rejections we get. And I just don't think you could take it seriously. I don't. I stopped taking it seriously decades ago. It's just too ridiculous. You know? I've seen, and if you've been writing long enough like I have, I've seen an evolution, if you want to call it, maybe even a de-evolution, of the soulless form letter, where now they even try to sound like, you know, buddy, and friendly and kindly and compassionate. Please, if you're willing to do this, I can't really take you that seriously. So, and I'm not going to. I urge you guys not to either. To go out in there, getting depressed about it, getting upset about it, having 19 beers about it and screaming about it on Facebook, some letter that you don't even know the person read your stuff. They certainly don't really seem to care. They just pressed a button. They sent something, some nonsense that some guy wrote in a basement someplace, you know, 2 years ago. What does that have to do with you and the cool poem you just wrote? Nothing. Okay. All right. Next, we have difference of definition. Okay. And what that means is simply this. And you can't really control this. It depends on the person. But you could get an actual editor that read your material. I know, incredible. And they have a difference in how they defined what you believe that piece is. They might have a difference of, I think it's a prose poem versus a microfiction. They might think that what you're doing is a rant versus an opinion that you built into an artistic piece and made it artistic, but it's still of an opinion. Oh, no, that's just a rant. There's not a whole lot you could do about that. They're not exactly going to come back and give you lots of instructions other than they might literally just say, listen, I think this is a rant and it doesn't really meet our artistic merits. Or I thought you were going to send me a microfiction and I really think this is actually just a prose poem. So sometimes people's definitions can be very strange, and there's not a whole lot you could do about that in that market. It could just be closed for you on that particular piece, and maybe something else you send them, you know, later on could really strike the gold or hit their definition more carefully. I'm not going to get really upset about this because in the end, there's not a lot you could do about it, and some of it can just simply be, you know, an honest viewpoint. I mean, and you can't dispute that, you know. I had a place, and I still have a place in Canada, where they just love to have all kinds of different definitions to what I believe. I mean, they literally have the confusion between the prose poem and the microfiction, one of my favorite ones. And I even talked to them a couple of times about it, and I was a little aggravated, but you know, they try to give me the best intellectual answer they could give me, and at least they're communicating with me. So God bless them. I'm not going to complain about that. But they said, listen, even though we accept the flash fiction, we're still expecting some sort of elements of the short story. And I'm explaining to them, listen, flash fiction isn't a short story. It doesn't have a traditional beginning, middle, or end. Sometimes it's simply just a one array of motion that's done artistically in a short, you know, 500 words or so. But if you want that type of flash fiction, or for some reason you want to make a short story like a flash faction piece and then make it more short story like, why don't you just put that in your guidelines? What do I got to hear this stuff later on, you know, in this rejection letter? They haven't done that. I don't know why. Maybe they don't care. You got me. But I see that a lot. I wish the guidelines were a little bit more defined. This way we wouldn't have such a difference of definition. But that happens a lot. And that's sometimes that rejection you're getting is that true difference. Do you want to get annoyed? Yeah, sometimes. I know I do. But it's not really up to the level of anger. And even though it might be in the realm of rejection, I still put that one to the side as understanding that, listen, I'm not getting hit on the merits of this. Somebody's actually reading it. It just doesn't really jive to them on the category that they think it should be in because they mistake it for something else. It's just an honest difference of definition. And I keep it at that. That's all really you can do. And then you move on. In many instances later on, I got something else published. Why? When I thought that I had sent it the second time, a different piece along the same, you know, my own personal guidelines of it, they took that versus the other. Heck if I know. That could be a bit of a mystery. But that it is out there. And you only can take so much of it seriously because you honestly don't know in the end if what you're doing is going to meet their definition. You'd think there should be some uniform stuff out there, or at least, like I said, alter the guidelines to make it clear that, you know, I am looking for, I'll give you an example, and this is a really good one for horror, okay? And usually they're pretty good about this, by the way. You'll get some horror publications, because that's all they do is horror, but they have a lot of like subgenres in there or subcategories, and they make it clear, hey folks, listen, we really just want like the classic vampire, werewolf, zombie type thing, and we don't really want anything else. Okay, cool. Now you have some parameters. Or we want regular horror, anything you think is horror, and also the psychological horror too. We'll take that too if it's scary enough. Well, there you go on that difference sometimes, because you can send something that is psychological horror, but maybe for them it wasn't scary enough. So those things are going to happen, and you just hope that they're going to try to be more precise. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, but we're going to face that. It's an unusual stumbling block, but I haven't found it to be something that totally keeps people out of stuff, especially if they think it's still a worthwhile market. If they feel that in the end they're being treated fairly, even if it doesn't seem fair, they could go back to that place. And sometimes you're just going to get picked up anyway. So, you know, keep at it on that one, all right? The third category here is difference of opinion. Always an exciting one. Because in the end, you might feel that your work has gone in a different direction than the editor believes. Now, we're not talking about the merits of your work in terms of, you know, does it get something interesting across? Is it entertaining, or is it original? Is it like powerful, or is it written correctly and, you know, grammatically sound? We're not even talking about the merits of that. We're just talking about, listen, I wrote this piece and I really think it's about society abusing the elderly, and I try to use the rats in a park and just people's overreaction as a backdrop to that. And then the other person can say, no, I really think it's just a depressing psychological horror piece, and it's not going to fit what I'm doing, so, you know, have a good day. That's a real example of something I did, you know, and I honestly felt what I said was true, and the other person did not. And I got a number of rejections from that piece. And each one of those writers, those editors, God bless them, literally said something. They didn't just give me some form letter. They literally went over there and said, you know, this is entertaining, but, you know, I'm not swinging with it. One said it wasn't realistic enough that an old man could go to a park that's near a harbor and somehow, through his purposeful malfeasance by feeding and overfeeding the rats there, that he can create so many rats that they can start invading the neighborhood, that was too much of a stretch of an imagination. like I'm writing a journalistic piece over here. Folks, that's why it's called fiction. You're supposed to stretch a little bit. It's supposed to be, and the reader gets the point that, hey, no, he can't really generate maybe 1,000 rats running everywhere, but we get the point that he's depressed, he's angry at society, he's trying to strike back, and he's not trying to strike back with guns and violence and poison and bombs, but he's trying to strike back in his own little old guy way. Well, I'll get back these folks. I'll put some rats everywhere and see how they react to that. Ha, ha, ha. Because he's sad and he's angry and he's lonely. That was it. Not too terribly complicated, but I got a lot of unusual reactions from that piece. It finally got published. I'm happy so. That was actually an instance where, and I'm going to have an episode about this in the coming weeks about the validity and the value of anthologies. But that was one of those pieces where the anthology took it after it got published formally in another magazine, and they were okay about that, that it was already published ready. And I told them up front, and they were cool, and I'm glad they like it. They actually, funny enough, had thought that it was less of a psychological horror piece and was more of a social commentary kind of piece in disguises of fiction. Who knows? That's a real difference of opinion, even when you get accepted sometimes. And that happens. I've actually known some writers that said, I struggled whether I wanted to take this lady's acceptance of my piece because apparently she thinks it's something else than I think. Well, you never want to do that, in my opinion. You never want to tell somebody, no, don't take what you want to publish because you don't agree with me about what it's really about. That's not really sensible, folks, and it's not practical for your credit history, what you're trying to build up as a writer and your credibility, because think about it. You're not always going to hear back from the readers, and you might have, 50 readers out there, and they might all think it's something different. They might agree with the editor, even. Hell, I had one editor literally put in their editor notes, because some magazines do this, they'll have an editor notes. Yeah, this piece is coming out from this person in this magazine, and it's saying this, and I'm reading it going, what? It's literally like leading the people to an entire place which I don't expect the piece is going to go. What can you do about that? You could protest if you want. Not a good idea. Probably get the piece withdrawn and make somebody upset. Otherwise, just go with it and laugh. Yeah, I thought it was about space objects, and they think it's about spirituality. Okay, whatever. I'm happy it got out there. I'm happy they saw something in it that was of value, and maybe other people might see the same thing, or maybe they might all see what the editors just love to see. Who knows? I don't think you should care about that sort of a difference of opinion. But the difference of opinion of what you wrote and what they think it is, and sometimes that forms a rejection, well, you could go back if you want and say, listen, I really think it's this, and maybe have a conversation, or they just might not ever communicate with you again. You don't really know what's going to happen. You got to kind of take that by ear. I know that wherever it concerns the direct situation of a magazine having a specified theme that month or that quarter, hey, this is about zebras, okay? If I'm feeling I'm sending them a zebra poem or a zebra fiction piece, and they're telling me, no, man, this is just a painted horse, I'm like, what? What should I be doing then? Can you specify what the heck are we talking about here? This is something then you might want to discuss. That's something you might want to say, because then you're like wondering, did I miss something? Did I mess up something in my work that led them to believe that I'm not talking about a zebra, but I'm talking about a painted horse? I don't even know what that is, actually. I'm from the city, okay? But I've heard this sort of thing, painted horse. Are you making fun of my writing here? Are you saying I just got the theme wrong? What are you saying? So you might want to get some clarification on that. So this way you're not in any way possibly doing something that is messing up what you're trying to get across. By accident, of course. It's not like you're purposely doing that, but it can happen, and you want to make sure and get some clarification. There's nothing wrong about that. The difference of opinion is just that. It could have been they ran it really fast and they just didn't catch everything. Can you look at that again? Did I miss something? And if you ask this in a polite, inquisitive, obviously creative way, you might get an answer back. You might even get a reconsideration. That happened to me once. Well, I literally asked a couple of questions. I tried not to be sarcastic or snarky about it. I just tried to say, I'm not really understanding what you're saying here. I thought I hit the mark. Now, if you don't want it for another reason, okay, fine. That's your prerogative. But if you're telling me you don't want the reason is because you don't think I've met the basic requirements of the theme, can you tell me why? And I literally got an email back saying that, well, we discussed it further and we think it does meet the basic requirements and we're going to publish this. And that's that. I mean, I don't want to go any further than that. I got the publication. I got my point across. You know, you don't want to sit down and have these people, you know, evaluate a zebra poem for 3 weeks either, okay? It's a zebra poem, please. But those are some of my basic experiences and my basic ideas and feelings about the difference of opinion. It's going to happen, and it could be a positive note on the rejection, because it could actually clue anyone on something, okay? And it could also be something just simply negative, and you don't understand what's going on, and maybe you can get some more clarification, and that can inform you as a writer, or maybe your style, or something that you've done on that particular piece, you can now take note of, so you don't do that again, and you become that much better. That's really what editors are supposed to do, even when they reject you. In my humble opinion, they're supposed to be able to give you something that you can use for the next time, maybe the next time with them, or the next time someplace else, but something useful and constructive as much as possible. Why not? That's really what they're supposed to be doing. I just wish I saw more of that. All right, category number 4. Now, let me encapsulate this. The first three categories, the soulless rejection, the difference of definition, and the difference of opinion, those are three categories where you do not have as much right to be saying I could have done something different. There's only slight little variations there on where you could have done something different to maybe get a different result, or maybe get an acceptance versus a rejection. But these next two categories, the wrong market and editorial comment, well, those are going to fall more on you. So the first three are really about the other side, the editor and that magazine, and maybe the editorial staff, or they have, sometimes they have a committee that do these things. And a lot of that falls on them. What do you mean with this obscure form letter? What does that mean? And what does that mean to me? Probably not a whole lot. And those other categories as well, the difference of definition, the difference of opinion, those are really out there on the other person. You only have a slight thing that you might be able to do about it. But most of it is beyond your control. And that is the heart of those three definitions for me, is when the majority of that stuff or all of that stuff is beyond your control, it also means in the end that you should not take that rejection to heart. I mean, you could stir it in your brain if you want. You can have an emotional response like, oh, that's a bunch of baloney. Okay, fine. But I leave it at that and move on. It shouldn't be rattling your brains. You shouldn't be walking up and down your house with three espressos and a cigarette. I mean, please. Over a form letter? Come on. Back in the day, I used to print them out when they were in the email, or the ones that came in the mail, and I lined the cat box with them and let the cat take care of his business on those form letters, okay? Because I promise you, what was coming out of the cat was more worthwhile than any of those letters said. In fact, I think it was actually more valuable too. But those things are not useful. Now, these next two categories, especially here, number 4, which is wrong market. Well, this is on you. This is not at all on the editor. And this happens. This happens because sometimes writers, they're not doing research to find out where their stuff can go. They have the best chance for it to get accepted. Sometimes they do scant research. Sometimes they do brief research. Sometimes they don't do any at all. I'm just going to send it out to everybody. Whatever it says, whatever. We'll see what happens. Well, when you do that, folks, not all you're giving people extra work and annoying them, you're wasting your time. And you're getting some rejections that you shouldn't have gotten because, quite frankly, you deserve them. You did it without even looking. Blindly sending stuff out, bad idea. You're going to get rejections you shouldn't be getting. Why would you want to get them? Why would that person not want to make note of you in the future? Yeah, that's that guy that sent me that squirrel poem, and I said I wanted the zebra poem. Oh, my favorite one. A magazine might have a theme about like gay issues, and then you're sending them a piece of work or fiction or nonfiction or a poem, and it has no reference to any kind of a gay subject matter. Just a regular old poem. Okay, great. That's probably not a good place for them to go there. They're looking for certain things. You're not providing them. I don't know what you would say to that. I didn't notice it. They had a gay theme. Normally, they're kind of plastered all over the place to let you know. It's not hard to tell. So, and sometimes that's a mistake. Fine, laugh at it and go about your business. You deserve the rejection. But other times, I'm telling you, it's not a mistake. It's just they didn't look. They just shot it off. Okay, there you go. Billy Bob review. Yeah, that's probably okay for me. Let me go send this off. And, you know, turns out Billy loves Bob, and this is not exactly a good piece for you. That's not helpful. There is a number of instances, and I've been guilty of this, and I've been more careful ever since. But in the past, I was guilty of this. I'll give you an example. I'm a playwright, and oftentimes it'll say in the playwright guidelines, they might have a certain theme because they want to do a certain show at a certain period of time that reflects that. Not all theaters are like that. Some theaters will just take whatever you send them, and if it fits into their cast or, you know, the mood of the day or something that they can actually feel they could pull off on the stage, they might really seriously consider it. But in some cases, and this is a great example, they might say, and you have to read carefully on this, because I didn't, and I got a couple of issues for it, and I deserve to get those issues. I had a theater that said, we want plays about women by women. I didn't catch the by part. So I just, because I wrote a couple of plays that have all female characters in it, and I've gotten them produced. But, and that was later on. But in the beginning, I didn't because I wasn't reading those things carefully. Now, there are guidelines on some plays where it'll actually say, we want all women plays for this production we're doing. All short women plays. And then it'll say, we don't really care who wrote them. As long as they're about women, we'll take them and check them out and see what we can do. So then I could go send that. And I did, and I did well with it, fortunately. But the ones that didn't, some of them even sent back. I mean, what are you thinking, man? Did you notice the guidelines? My God, I didn't. But it wasn't a situation where I didn't read them, because I did read them. I just didn't read it carefully. I just made this quick assumption. Oh, yeah, there we go. That's one for me. Boop. Yeah, I'm wrong. So, and I know I've done this already on a couple of ones that were about culturals, because I have a couple of plays that have African-American characters and a couple that have Hispanic characters as well. And that was the same situation. I got all of those actually produced off-Broadway, but they didn't have the guideline where I had to be that, you know, I had to be an African-American to do that. But there's some that do. So me sending them over there, you know, that wasn't really helpful for them and for me. I wasted the time, and of course I wasted my own time. So I've learned over time to be a lot more careful. Sending things to the wrong market, it happens a lot. I'm telling you, it often happens because either you're not reading carefully or you're just not reading at all. All right? You got to be more thorough. You got to be more careful. I'm not telling you that you need to be spending 17 weeks on researching everything for your plays or your poems or your nonfiction or your fiction. You don't. But it's not terribly difficult to check out something. I mean, there are many lists out there on the internet that say, here's a list of about 50 publications that want short fiction pieces, microfiction, flash fiction, whatever you want to call it, 500 to 1,000 words. And then you can just check those out quickly. Does that have a theme this month? Or does that have a particular angle they want? No? Okay, good. My piece fits around there. You had 600 words. Okay, boom, I can go there. This is not terribly difficult to do, folks. It is part of what Linda Imbler had mentioned recently in her interview. It's part of our whole process of being prepared as writers. It's some of these things we seem to forget or discard. Oh, I wrote this. I rewrote it. I feel it's solid. That's great. But I'm telling you, not only are you wasting your time, but you betray your own talents when you send something to a place it doesn't belong. It doesn't make any sense. And then sometimes people, if the editor doesn't say anything, you get one of those form letters, you might not even know that you've done that, that you've made that ridiculous mistake. And now you're over there getting 4 and 5 and 6 of these things, and you're like, oh my God, the world hates me. Oh, they don't like my writing. Oh, something's wrong with this poem. No. Nobody out there really hates you. And there's probably nothing wrong with the poem. But there is something wrong with you. You're not sending it to the correct places. Now, don't get me wrong here, folks. I'm not some expert on what the correct place is. None of us are. Or we'd all have a lot more production and writing credits. That takes time. That takes sometimes luck. Sometimes you might get an editor that says, yeah, this is different than what I've seen before. I like this. I'm going to go with it. You might catch him that says, hey, it's a good poem, but I've kind of heard this sort of thing before, and I don't want to go with it. They won't tell you that, but that's sometimes that's the feeling. That's happened to me as an editor as well, okay? But you have to realize that you increase your chances when you actually send it to a market that might be able to withstand what you're doing. You can't do something that sticks out so badly that they're going to say, poof, this isn't going here. I don't see anything about a zebra. I don't see anything about an African-American this or Hispanic that or women this or a gay that or all these various themes that could be out there. They now have themes about mental illness, depression, and even disability. Now, I can't tell you that I know anything about how to write something about somebody who's disabled, but I have to think that crew out there, that editor out there, probably does, and they probably realize, you know, this person is not disabled. I'm not really sure why they did this. And so that category, wrong markets, is all about the writer. So we are responsible for that. We have to hold ourselves accountable for that, because I guarantee you the editors are going to, and sometimes they actually come out of their shell and say, hey, did you realize that this is a market about disabled people and some of the issues they have to face in the world? And you send me this home about your grandmother being sick. I hope she does better with her life and hope she gets well. But unless she's in a wheelchair or facing some disabilities, this is not going to be the market for you. And even if she is, you haven't really specified that in the piece. No, of course I didn't, because I didn't really read that market well. So read the market well, folks. Read it, because it makes a big difference on your rejection rate. It makes a big difference, I think, even on your confidence rate. Your confidence shouldn't take all these hits, but sometimes they do, because you're just not doing what you're supposed to do to be prepared. Be prepared, folks. All right, last an interesting market is, and one of those I've actually had some issues with, good and bad, is the editorial comment. And what that simply means is, that rare, and I wish it was not so rare, but that rare communication from an editor, and whether it's negative or positive, literally says something particularly about your piece. Well, there's a lot of interesting things that goes on with that commentary. And the first one that hits your mind is, wow, this person has read my piece. Even if they got something bad to say, that's the first thing you're patting yourself on the back on. Oh, definitely read that. Okay, cool. Now, what do we do here? So you're going to have some people that are very short shrift on it, you know? Hey, this is 18 lines, man, and I fell asleep after the 15th line. So you might want to consider, like, you know, roughing up that the end part over there, because you were going good and now you made me fall asleep. Okay, great. Little mixed bag on that commentary. It can happen, though. You got something like that, even if it might sound harsh, it's something you want to take seriously, because they're saying some good things and they're just saying you got a little bit more to go. I've gotten some commentaries in the past where the editor literally told me, and they made no promises. All they told me was, listen, Mark, this poem is going exactly where you intended it to go. We can actually tell. Even the title makes perfect sense to us, but that last line is dumb. You ought to just get rid of it and leave the poem as it is and get rid of that last line. And I'm like listening to this commentary and I'm thinking to myself, that's pretty precise stuff. Let's go back to that. I go back to that and I go, wow, it does read just as well. In fact, it might even be a little stronger. I was iffy about how strong it would be, but I can tell you one thing. Once I took off that hat, that last line, I guess it might have been more of a throwaway line, not realizing it. I just didn't realize it at all. And it wound up being published by the same people. So I literally just resend it back to see what happened. And they said, yes, we like this and we'll take this. And so that worked out great. And couldn't be any more happy with that. I've gotten some commentary one time where I was putting together a flash fiction piece that I liked a lot. It had some, even some personal affinity to it. And the person came back and he said, "Listen, us and the council over here, we love the beginning and the end, but we think the middle needs to be beefed up a little bit." And they literally gave me a couple of examples on ways they thought I could beef it up, or things that they thought I should expand on, because I had made some direct comments about a few things that would make the piece more worthwhile. And they literally said, "If you did this, then we're going to consider it. Send it right back." I did that. And apparently they were right. I felt the piece was a lot stronger, and they published it. So there you go on something that was very useful and constructive. Well, guess what? You're going to get some negative stuff. I do this a lot, because if anyone knows anything from Aerial Chart, is I'm fanatical about titles. It's part of my own poetic philosophy that the title is really your big marketing brand. It's your big calling card. It's your big sign out to the world. So it shouldn't have a boring cliche title that 29,000 other people use, and now you think it's supposed to be wonderful. And why do you think it's wonderful? Well, you know why you think it's wonderful? It's because you put together a really good poem, but the title sucks. And you confuse the two. And that happens a lot. I was telling somebody the other day, I don't know if they might have sent it on the other shows, but in 2018, I got 27 poems called Nature. All 27 of them were rejected. I'm like, and each time I told the person, "This is a really worthwhile poem. Why are you calling it Nature? Did you run out of steam after the poem was over with? Was it just an afterthought? Do you really think this is that good? Do you not see that compared to the poem, this title is boring? Why would you want to do that?" Even the readers would say, "Huh, what?" So no, folks, the body of the poem, the body of the work, is not going to make up for you having a corny, cliche, overused, ridiculous title. No, it's not. So I reject those. I usually tell the people, though, that it's not a formal rejection, meaning that if they consider to change that and come up with something really interesting, I'll have them resend it, and many a times I published it. So I don't know if it's a pause or I don't know. By doing that, I haven't even come up with an actual term for how I do that. So I guess you got to call it a rejection, you know, unless you fix it. But I am serious about that. I've had some people just not respond to me. Oh, well, what are you going to do? But I'm not going to take some poem, you know, that says harm. That's the name of the title. Oh, of nature, trees, dogs, smiles. I got a poem that exasperation. I mean, come on, folks, huh? You're going to write 60, 70, 80 words of a poem, and then you got one title, and it just looks like you stole it out of a newspaper or one of those tabloids. Come on. Let's get with it. Let's get interesting and poetic. So those sort of things, that's what I do. But you're going to get comments, and you're going to get these commentaries. They're on you still. Even if you don't think they're entirely fair, you should always take what an editor has to say seriously. Even if you don't think it's completely fair, as long as it's not something that's hateful or just out of the complete realm of possibility, you know. I like three words in this thing. All the rest of it I don't care about. I mean, it's not very useful. But you won't get too many like that, I doubt. But you should always do it, because if a person, especially a lot of these editors that love to send those letters out that say nothing, they actually say something, look at it. Take it seriously. Take it to heart. Don't take it negatively, even if it is negative, and see if there's something you can do. Maybe there is. Maybe there's not. Maybe you're just happy that somebody at least responded, and you kind of go from that. I remember just the other day reading on Facebook a nice poet fellow from South Africa. I know he's living in France right now. First name Don, and I don't mind mentioning him. I don't think he'll mind hearing me say this. He had tried to say in his commentary that he had some rejections that were grossly unfair, and he did his best to try to rebound from those and make those stronger for him to be able to produce some other work, and got that work out there. And that was the validation, of course, that maybe those rejections were not fair, or was he even grounded in art? He might have been grounded in more of a social prejudice. And maybe that's the case. That does happen. And that's a way to be positive, and God bless him from doing that. Everybody has a different reaction to rejection. And I'm not going to really dictate to somebody how they're supposed to react. You know, be like Don and try to get it positive and do something. Not everybody can do that. And I gotta accept that, and I respect that. But what I do say is, at least consider the context of this rejection, and then sometimes even the source. Because like I said, in these five categories, you got a couple of them that you don't have control over. They might not mean much of anything, you know? And you can call yourself a silly head when you send it to the wrong market. You just try to make sure you don't do that again. And with the editorial commentary, there's still positive stuff in there, even if it's negative, because they're singling you out. They're saying they think about this, they think about that. You remember that kind of stuff. You go send it to somebody else. Maybe it turns out somebody says something similar. Maybe they're on the right track and you got to change stuff. Or maybe it's like somebody just completely says, this thing is absolutely wonderful, when the other guy is saying, I'm not really sure about it. That happens a lot as well. But keep in mind that, yes, you could do like Don and try to turn a rejection into a victory. And don't get me wrong. Lots of us do that just naturally without thinking about it, by saying stuff out there. And eventually it gets picked up by somebody who likes it and gives it a home. But sometimes rejection can be educational. And in many, many, many instances, and I'm telling you, I think most of the instances when we get rejections, it's not really valid. You don't know what they've really said or done. You don't even know if they read it or not. So you don't want to take those things seriously on any level. Put that stuff in the cat box or the bird cage or in your shredder. Put it out of your mind, because it doesn't have anything to do with you. It has more to do with that other person simply not doing what they should be doing in their job as an editor. I remind editors whenever I can. I don't know if they listen or even care what I have to say. But I remind them that what they do, it has impact, good and bad. And when you do things that are less than honorable or less than productive, you could harm people. You hurt people for no good reason, and you can mess them up when it's not necessary to do. You have an effect on what you're doing. And I'm not saying that you need to run around as a guilty person trying to accept everybody so the world is better. You still have to be an editor. You still have to look at that thing critically. But what I am saying is, when you do these things that are less than useful, you do produce some negative impact out there and hurt people that didn't deserve that, that's not warranted. And it probably drives even some people away after a while. I mean, I want you folks to stick with it, don't get me wrong, but I understand that rejection can be painful. And I don't make light of it. I certainly don't laugh at it. I mean, the subtitle here is slights and salutes, because, you know, you're going to get some salutes as well. You know, even when it seems kind of negative, they might have something constructive to say. You're going to get a little mixed bag sometimes. Go with it. Use it, you know, to your advantage, because communication is important. And believe it or not, a carefully worded rejection letter from somebody that actually read your work, it's still some kind of a salute. It's still kind of some kind of connection, some kind of communication. Just don't think of it at all as being bad, because they might be trying to tell you something that they see that you could fix or you can change around, and suddenly you turn something that wasn't perfect now into something that is worthwhile for us all to read and for us all to enjoy. Well, folks, until next time, just keep in mind, please, that while you're out there, And while you're out sending your material out there, you know, you are also sending it to people themselves who are writers. So just keep in mind that you're dealing with people that are also human like you and have also experienced rejection. You just have to hope as you continue to send things out there that you're going to get picked up. You're going to get noticed. You're going to have someone call out your name. I know I do as much as I can with Aerial Chart. And I just hope more folks will follow suit. But you stay the course and you stay strong. Until next time.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.